Just to Survive is once again playing with pride. Now the Lions will look to even the score. Can York record their first ever victory against the Gaels? Or will Queens continue their royal rule over the Lions? Tune in to CFRC 101.9 FM or CFRC.ca to catch all the bone-crunching action. 2:45 pregame show, 3 p.m. kickoff. We hope to see you there.
This episode of the Kingston Live podcast is brought to you by Grand Onstage. Get the most out of the Kingston Grand Theater experience with access to pre-sale tickets, the best prices, and the best seats. Tickets for individual performances and subscriptions for the Grand Onstage season are on sale now at kingstongrand.ca.
Every music scene has its staples. Artists that not only make great tracks, but play a key role in the growth and status of the community. Artists who put the same energy into their shows as they do the scene. This is Kingston Live, and today we're joined by a cornerstone of Kingston punk music and beyond. It's been 6 years since the Meringues dropped their self-titled album. But that 6 years has been anything but quiet for Amanda Pance and Ted Evans. As the principal songwriters behind the Meringues, Amanda and Ted have continued to expand their wild stage performances and hone their tracks as they grew their band, all while taking on solo records and other projects to production credits and collaborations. Now they're gearing up for the release of their long-awaited follow-up, Pavlova's Dog. And they've joined us to talk onstage antics, creating music, and why it's sometimes good to meet your heroes.
This is Kingston Live. Welcome. My name is Riley Jabor. I'm one of your hosts. And joining me as the co-host for the first time, someone that you probably may already know as part of Kingston Live, because she is our photographer extraordinaire. She is the social director for Kingston Live. If you are a listener of this podcast, you probably attend live shows. And if you attend live shows, there's a very decent chance that Virginia Meeks has a photo of you. Welcome behind the mic for the first time.
Hello.
Hello. And joining us as our guests in this edition of Kingston Live, it is Ted Evans and Amanda Pance of the Meringues. Welcome.
Hey,
hello.
Riley and Virginia.
What's up?
We're happy to be here.
Cool to have Virginia here, too, as a co-host. This is awesome.
Agreed.
Yep.
I felt bad immediately. We're immediately putting you on the spot. So let's talk about all the new stuff with you guys, because you have your new album, Pavlova's Dog, coming out on the 16th of September. That is just around the corner. It's a sophomore album. Tell us a little bit about it, just to get us started here.
Yeah, I don't know. It's about time.
Yeah, it's been 6 years in the making. We spent the last little while working on it. A few of the songs go back a few years in the band, but a lot of them were new with this new group, putting them together and working them out with Alistair on drums, Jackson on bass. And the whole recording process was, it was crazy. We were in multiple different studios. We did some drums at Metalworks, a great studio, obviously, in Mississauga. We did guitars and mostly just guitars. Yeah, I did like 2 7-hour days at my uncle's place right before they sold it. So it was a big empty house, and I got to make my own little like studio in there, and it was awesome. So did guitars out there to a point that I was like icing my arm between tracks and takes because it was just like consistent guitar and bar chords, lots of bar chords. Then we did vocals at our house, and Amanda, that was kind of fun. I thought you did really well doing the vocals in the booth.
Yeah, it was a lot of late nights. We work a lot, so coming home at the end of the day, putting in those hours, but got it done. Didn't feel like we would for a while.
Yeah.
Got it done.
Big thing too was it was produced, or I should say mixed, by Ian Doherty from July Talk, who was a big July Talk's a big one of our, you know, heroes. We love July Talk. So connecting with Ian and some of the groups that he's worked with too, we love. So we thought this would be a good, like a really good opportunity to just reach out and ask. And he could have said no, and that would have been fine. But he was happy to work on the stuff, and it was really cool. We think he did an incredible job.
I was going to ask about the July Talk connection, because I saw his credits on the first two singles for the album, and I know you're both huge July Talk fans. That inspiration seems to kind of come across on stage, too. Is that a conscious effort?
I think a little bit. I mean, we obviously try to do our own thing. We don't want to directly rip them off, but Ted will say, I don't know. It's me. I'm the problem. You know? But I will often be like, well, July Talk does this thing. July Talk says this. July Talk in an interview. So, yeah, a little bit, but a lot of it, for sure. They even have a lyric that's kind of, whose stolen skin do you fit into? And I'm like, yours.
Yours.
A little bit. Can I just, like, try it on, please? So, yeah, we love them. They're really nice people. We've met them a few times as well, and they're just so sweet to all of their fans. There's something magical about them. We always say when we see them, they're like, Ted and Amanda, and we're like,
how
do you remember? Like, yeah, and hundreds of other fans, and are just so friendly with them as if you are their best friend. And I think it's a magical thing that they in particular have that I wish I could harness it.
Yeah, it was very, very inspiring. But as you said too, Amanda, I think, we do try to keep it, you know, unique. Like, we're never trying to steal stuff. And it is on stage that we kind of embody that that crazy energy. The first time we ever saw them, Peter walked out and was immediately like punching himself in the face, and we're like, whoa, this is something we need to like start exploring, at least, and figuring out, can we make people feel like that when we go out on stage? But yeah, musically, I always say they're like a little more bluesy, we're a little more punky. But
yeah, we saw them for the first time open up for Alabama Shakes, actually, in Ottawa. And I was a huge, and still am, Alabama Shakes fan, and walked in there being like, Alabama Shakes is my number one band, and walked out being like, July Talk is my number one band, and we need to start a band. So they were huge inspiration. Actually, I think the first time we ever saw Alabama Shakes was on the party bus with you,
Riley,
way back in the day. So
I still feel shame about that, because I do not remember Alabama Shakes set. I drank 6 beers on that bus and then continued to drink all day at the festival. I remember half a song of Alabama Shakes, and then I was just gone.
It was a wild time. Yeah. It was fun.
Yeah, I can relate to that. Yeah.
I also like the anecdote of seeing July Talk play, and you see Peter punching himself in the face, and you're like, I gotta try that.
Yeah.
That looks so good.
Yeah, it was, I think, just that feeling. Like, Amanda was scared. Like, she literally looked at me and was like, I could see it on her face, and it was like a trigger warning, like a trauma type of, like, she was like, I don't know what I just watched. And then like seconds later, she's like, but I love it. Like, exactly. Yes. And you felt that too. You said that to me, like, we have to start a band. We have to figure this out. And again, if we do exactly what they're doing, we're just doing what they're doing. But
yeah, they just made us feel some kind of way, I think, and pushed us out of our comfort zone as audience members. And I think that's kind of the thing we have taken as the Meringues, and like to keep pushing ourselves out of our comfort zones and push audience members maybe a little out of their comfort zones as well. So
absolutely. I think it's not that you pinch in either style or anything, but I think there's such like a almost twin spirit vibe to it, where they have all these different elements on stage, and then they also have a number of side projects, and you guys have a number of side projects, and the visual presentation of their efforts is very important to them. And I just saw a post from Peter maybe 2 weeks ago about these video boards he made for his amps.
I love those amps.
They're so sick.
They're so cool.
And it kind of made me think of all the video production you've done, and all the stuff you did for your streams with Shook Planet over the course of the pandemic. Not the exact same, obviously, but similar vibes, you know?
Yeah, for sure. No, I feel that too. I saw that too. He made those amps for Good Kid, and I was like immediately just blown away. I was like, how do I do this? Like, I don't know why they keep doing things that I just want to do, but I mean, that's inspiration, obviously, and that's always what it's been, seeing from family members of mine that played in bands to classic rock bands even that I look at. That's, I see it and I'm like, that's what I want to do. Yeah, they've been huge for that. July Talk's been awesome. So to work with just one of them, Ian, who's an incredible guitar player, I always fanboy over his guitars when he's on stage. I'm like, oh, the gold telly. He's got the gold telly. Stuff like that. Yeah. That is so incredible to work with your heroes.
We mentioned the new album. You said it's been 6 years since the last one.
Yeah.
Why the pause?
I think the pandemic is in there. That was a factor that came into play. And then another thing, I think just kind of the rotation of band members we've had over the years and figuring out whether we are just going to present it as the Meringues or just Ted and Amanda with like a backing band, or are the Meringues Ted, Amanda, Alistair and Jackson, or who had ever been in the band at that time. And more recently, yeah, we are the group now. And that's kind of what it was, I think, more than anything, was that it never felt like the time to record, because on the last album we had members quit in the studio and had to replace them with the producer's son, and it became very much not the band that was playing those songs right after it was recorded. Like, I played bass on the first album, obviously wasn't a bass player and guitar player, and Arden, actually the Matt Rogalski's son, who played the drums, ended up being in the band for a while, so that did kind of work out. But yeah, it just felt like the personnel was never the Meringues. Like, it was like, why record this band if it's not the band?
Yeah, we kind of, you get stuck in the loop as well of having to teach new members your old songs and trying to jam on the new songs and things like that. It just constantly felt like every time we maybe got a little bit ahead, something would happen and we'd fall back behind and be back at ground zero teaching somebody new all the songs, and felt like we were in that loop for a long time.
Yeah. And the new material, like, they kind of came out slowly at first. We had Shambles. I think I found a video of us playing Shambles in 2022, like our first show back from the pandemic. I think we had kind of like worked on it a little bit and played it in like Oshawa or something, just tested it out, and it sounded cool. And then we stuck with that one. We had another one on the album, Time to Breathe, was something we bounced around the band for a bit. And then there's a few other ones that were there too that ended up not making the cut. They just got replaced by newer ones that we came up with along the way.
And you mentioned a little bit about the recording of the album. You said some of it was recorded at your uncle's house as he was moving out. I always find stuff like that really fascinating, hearing about the physical location kind of informing the album in some ways. You think of like the band and music from Big Pink and like other records that were recorded in places of like superb meaning to the band. Yes. Was there any emotion like that tied to your uncle's place?
Honestly, yeah. Like, I wasn't expecting it, because I spent a lot of time there growing up as a kid with my three cousins, like his three daughters and him and his wife, the whole family. I always went there in the winter for sledding. They had a huge hill. It's out in Harrowsmith. It's a great place. And yeah, I realized, I walked in and the place was empty. There was no more furniture. And I had that moment. I was kind of like, oh, I don't think I'll ever be in this house again. So there was a real emotional attachment and getting to set up. And my uncle was hanging out upstairs the whole time. And he said to my mom after, he's like, I kept offering him food and he kept saying, no, I'm fine. But all I saw him eat was Pringles the whole time. And yeah, I basically lived off Pringles and Red Bull recording the album. And it was fine. I mean, we made it through. But yeah, that space had a real, I don't know, not only the personal connection, but then after I got to kind of play with it on the album, we called it Todd's Place, just like as if it was a studio.
I did see that on the credits and I had so many questions.
Yeah. And Todd's Place is, my uncle's old place in Harrowsmith. It's now sold. Someone else has it. And they're living in a house that we recorded the album in. They don't even know.
I love stuff like that. Like music from Big Pink. Big Pink itself is on Airbnb now.
Yeah.
And half the reviews are people that are like, this is incredible, I can't believe I'm here. And half the reviews are like, it's fine.
Yeah,
it's a house I stayed in.
Yeah, they don't even know.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, that's so great. I love that.
Something I'm curious about, your cover art in your album artwork.
Yes.
I understand that you reached out to Liam Mills, who is an esteemed graphic designer. Can you tell me a bit about the inspiration behind what you were going for?
Well, we did a huge mood vision board, and we really got to this like inner child, kind of your inner weirdo and sort of fostering that, just your weirdness and your childlike being. I don't know.
Yeah, like being grown-ups, but not having really grown up.
Yeah, and you know, we like to be a little playful in the Meringues, and we're hitting off of that a little bit. So we reached out to a studio in Kingston because we wanted to try being in a photography studio with somebody who had all of these backdrops and different ideas that we didn't have, and that was really cool. So we were with Kaufman Photography in the boiler room. They have this very beautiful space, and they actually helped a lot with kind of guiding. We showed up with maybe like 100 outfits.
Like a lot. Like too many.
She was like, we're going to have to pick three each kind of thing. And that was good. Helped us bring it down a bit. But yeah, we really just wanted to be really playful with it and be really silly. And we did like one of the photos that we used. We're in like puppy dog ponchos from the dollar store and throwing confetti around and just all sorts of really fun things that made us reminisce about our childhood the whole day. So it was really fun. And then, yeah, Liam.
Yeah, he really brought a cool like element to it. We told him all of that. We said, you know, and we sent him all these other album covers that we had inspiration from. Like, okay, we want it to be a photo like of us, but we want there, and it's going to be a cool photo, not just like any photo. It'll be a cool photo. And then I need you to add like cool elements that are like keeping the idea going, because the photo may not be like us with a dog and a bone or something to be like Pavlova's dog. It's just gonna be us in front of like a backdrop with some cool stuff, and then he can add that in the elements. And we just kind of told him like, just go, like just create. Like, I don't have any like specific direction. Just make something kind of punky, kind of like graffiti style, kind of, you know, incorporate the meringues and Pavlova's dog. See what you can do.
And I think it turned out really good.
Yeah, he nailed it. There was no, we had no notes.
It's a complete reflection of the band itself. I find like when I look at them, I said, yes, that's the meringues.
Oh, I'm glad you feel that, because you would know. I mean, you've seen us from the start, Virginia, and you know, I think, yeah, if you felt that way, I'm glad. That's good. Good to hear.
Yeah. And you're always supporting local artists, and that is near dear to my heart as well, right? You know, Crazy and Liam Mills. It's just amazing. You're wonderful people.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot. Yeah, we love the people around us, and you know, talented photographers like yourself, and like you said, Quasi and Kaufman Photography. We got to, and Bohemian Beauty did our makeup and hair that day, which was cool. We were like glitter on the lips and all this stuff. It was so fun.
Oh, you went all out.
Oh yeah.
We didn't really like tell the other guys that they were going to be in full makeup. So makeup lady showed up. She was like, full makeup. They were like, and I was like, yes, in the chair you go. So we never tell Jackson and Alistair like what they have to wear, how they have to dress. And I was like, sorry, this is going to be the one time we are going to dress you head to toe, and you don't have a lot of choice today. So, but they ended up, I think
they loved
it. Yeah, they had fun. I think I like to think they did. They told me they did.
Well, we're talking a lot about the new album. We're talking about the new album art. Can we talk about a new single? Are we going to throw to something?
Yeah. I think we passed over Royalty to take a listen to. That was the advance single from the album. We shot the video over at the Spire with Josh Lyon. That was such a cool day. I say cool, but it was hot as hell. No air conditioning in the Spire, but beautiful space. We were all dressed in black and just rocking out and sweating all over everything. So
I'm also like extremely afraid of heights, and they have this balcony in there, and it's one of the reasons we picked the place. But when we got in there, I didn't realize it's actually slanted and all like in a weird, you feel like you're gonna fall over if you sit in the, I was afraid for maybe the first hour to even be on the second level. I thought I was gonna die. Like, I thought that building was going to cave in. It was so scary.
Yeah, luckily it didn't, and we got a good video for Royalty.
All right, let's throw it to it. This is the Meringues, Royalty, their brand new single off Pavlova's Dog on Kingston Live.
Your hair and scuffed that your head was waving.
episode of Kingston Live is brought to you by Grand Onstage. Grand Onstage takes you beyond the regular Kingston Grand Theater experience. It's a subscription option that gives you access to pre-sale tickets, the best prices, and the best seats. That means you can customize your own individual package starting at just 4 performances. Want to bring friends? Subscriber pricing applies to their tickets too. And if your plans change, just exchange your tickets for another performance. Tickets for individual performances and subscriptions for the Grand Onstage season are on sale now at kingstongrand.ca.
Yeah, I've been listening to Medusa on repeat all night long.
Oh, I'm glad you like it.
That specific song hits right.
Oh, I'm glad you like it.
Yeah.
For me, it's AI, like the album closer. There's something about it that's just like, it's got a really good, like, it's like good energy,
yeah,
for lack of a better word. That's, I know that's the most generic thing you can say about a song.
No, I get that, though. Yeah, no, I appreciate that, too. Like, I think those are two that, yeah, honestly, we toyed with for single ideas. Like, Medusa was actually, it was definitely going to be the single, and then Royalty just came out of nowhere. And then AI was one we toyed with when we were thinking, okay, let's replace Medusa with something. It was either like AI, what was the other one? Invincible could have been it, I think. There's a few. Like, I mean, I wanted Phantom, but Amanda's like, you sing too much in that one, and I don't sing enough.
It's true, I said that.
Let's talk a little bit more about that video for Royalty in the Spire. One, incredible venue for a music video. Just such cool architecture in there. Being able to see shots like of the curved staircase where you spend so much time. It also gives me, I don't know if this was intentional, Blair Witch vibes a little bit for a second there.
My cousin said that too, and we didn't even mean to do that. That was all your thing, right?
It kind of came back from that vision board. We kind of kept coming across these really funny pictures of like a person leaned up against the wall, and one was like their head was leaned against a locker while these people were playing, and another one on a set of stairs and the guy's just leaned against a wall. And we kept coming back to these kind of photos, and we never ended up using any sort of idea like that in the photo shoot. So we thought, let's go back to this for the music video. And even though we didn't think Blair Witch when it's coming up, we're like, we're glad that, because the sort of thought process was just that little bit of like pushing people out of their comfort zone, making them be like, why is that even there? What is that? Like wondering about it, maybe going back and being like, did I miss something? Is there a purpose to this? Just thinking about it a little bit more. And I like when people are like, Blair Witch, because I'm like, oh, maybe like, did it, like that discomfort that Blair Witch maybe made you feel is a little bit there too. Like,
yeah, when you thought it was real back in like 99 or 2000, people are like, no, man, it's real. Like, that was a real footage of people. And you're like, it was, though.
I read that they're making a Blair Witch remake, or at least kicking the idea around. And I'm like, I feel like the magic is all gone if you know that it's a remake. The whole gimmick was like, it's found footage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I remember the first time I saw Blair Witch. I went camping that night.
Oh, no. Why?
So living on the edge. Oh, my God. I couldn't. Oh, my God. No.
Yeah, we were talking about our first time watching it, too. And mine was with my mom and my brother at home. It was all innocent. But then our power went out immediately after we stopped watching it. And I got so scared. I had hives all over me. I never watched it again. Like, still to this day, I can't, even though I know it's fake now, I cannot watch Blair Witch Project. I can't.
So we were not referencing it on purpose. So I was not trying to bring out Amanda's hives. It came back to July time. That was even another thing. Another one of Amanda being like, actually, July Talk, it was in their videos. They have a few scenes where they have not the same pose, but you can see them in the background doing like a certain pose or something, and it kind of keeps relating back to that. And we thought, let's do something like that again. Not pinch it exactly or do the same pose, but just a pose, the Blair Witch pose.
It worked out perfectly. And it's great that you went around back to July Talk there, because I was going to talk about another musical legend, your opening, or your album release show, I should say, at the Broom Factory coming up on the 12th. You're opening for DOA Punk Legends. Yes. You got to be stoked about that.
Yeah, it's incredible. Not our first time opening for them. We opened for them many, many, many years ago. We still have the poster like framed in our hallway, and that's the only reason I would remember that, I think. But no, it was them, like Joey, obviously, really cool, like knowing what he's done and what they've done for punk in general, not only in Canada, but just punk, like just what punk is. To be around those people at all is cool.
Yeah, they're obviously legends for the DIY touring circuit, and I don't know if we would have that sort of thing if it wasn't for them. I think it's big credit to them for that, and we all know that, the big LA run. And like Ted said, we've played with them before, and they were so nice, so lovely. Sometimes you don't want to meet your heroes, and we've been blessed that our heroes, July Talk, DOA, have been really lovely people.
Yeah, honestly, I almost wasn't expecting it the first time we played with them, that because we played with SNFU, and although they were cool and everything, like, they were a little bit like a little more gruff, and like the one guitar player was like, hey man, you got a cigarette? And I was like, oh no, sorry, I don't smoke. And he's like, you must be a guitar player then. I was like, I mean, yeah, like, yeah, fair.
The whole point of being punk.
Yeah, like, what? It is. So yeah, he had me there. It was funny though, because then I was kind of expecting like that same vibe when we played with them, and they were just like, oh, like, hey guys, like, it was not at all like guitarist cigarette stuff. Like, it was very much the opposite. Like, I really like what you guys are doing, and just nice, like, nice and a nice human interaction.
Yeah, I actually always credit the name Pants a little bit to Joey Shithead and his book I Shithead. He has a little bit in there where he talks about not really finding his identity until he kind of got his nickname. That's kind of when I was coming up with the Pants, how do you say that?
Moniker.
Yeah, so no, it was just a big inspiration, and I really related to that. I never really liked my name growing up, and now it's like Pants is it. It's as real as it gets. There's no question that's my name, and yeah, huge inspiration.
Yeah, awesome. I don't even think I know your real name.
Yeah, a lot of people don't. And I won't tell.
Yeah.
So you've gotten a lot of traction with your single release, Shambles, with different publications inside and outside of Canada. What percent of this job would you say is mostly networking and sending emails?
Oh, yeah, a lot. I wish I could say it was like 1-2% and I got to just do music all the time. But no, yeah, that's what I mean. That's most of it is just getting your name out there, getting the word out there. I mean, how many songs drop to Spotify every day, right? Like, literally like millions every day are dropping on Spotify. And it's like, almost like, why would anyone listen to anyone's music or like our music? So let's tell some people why, or get the word out there a little more. And yeah, when it clicks and it's cool and you get on some playlists, and people around the world are like hearing your own song, it is a cool feeling. So it's not only just for like there's promotion and there's, yes, getting the name out there, but just that real experience of like, I wrote a song and there's like someone in Germany who like heard it and it's like, that's a cool song. And that's just an insane feeling as a songwriter in general. Like, that's just cool.
Yeah, that's really amazing.
I have nothing, because like, kudos to Teddy, does I'd say 98% of the behind the scenes work.
No, I mean, of things like the emails and the boring stuff, sure, but no, you guys all help a lot. I could not do it without the rest of the group. That's very true.
Would you say there's like, not only with the time commitment, but is there a secret sauce in a way to reaching out to these publications, or is there like a ratio almost of the number of resources or publications you reach out to versus ones that kind of get back to you and get somewhere?
I think, yeah, there's kind of, you have to like know it's a bit of a numbers game. Like, you're going to reach out to all the big ones, of course. You have to, if you're doing a list at all, hit up the big ones, because the worst they can say is no, which a lot of the time they do, and that's fine. They're not saying no because it's not good. Sometimes they don't even say no, that you just, they say nothing because they got 1,000,000,000 emails that week and yours was just, you know, lost in the flood of emails. So you can never take stuff like that personally, obviously, I think, as a songwriter or anyone releasing music or anything. But yeah, when the ones get back, you have to, obviously, in the first release, we did a similar thing. We sent out to a lot of people, and the ones who wrote about us, obviously, we send to them again. And they a lot of time write again, because it's like, oh yeah, band we've written about, and know that, you know, they're still active. And it's kind of like a mutual thing, because I know that working in radio too, when you get sent all these press releases, some are kind of like not really worth your time almost. And you can kind of prove that it's worth their time to put it on their show or do an article about it. I think that's kind of the thing. And then also cold calling kind of is like a good start. But then the opposite side of that is going in with contacts that actually do know people and are going to vouch for you. It's not just you going, hey, my band is great. Because obviously you're going to say that. And they have a million people, again, emailing them going, hey, my band is great. We put out a song. Like, of course, you're going to say that. And if they opened every email that said that, I mean, they'd never get anything done at work. So it's just, I think, just being realistic and not taking any of it personally.
That's good advice.
Yeah. I mean, it seemed to, yeah, like I say, it seemed to not like work, like it's been good. We have gotten great response, but it totally could have gone the other way too. It's not because, I don't think it's because of the quality of music or anything. If your song, like if it didn't get written about by some publication, I wouldn't have been like, well, that's a shitty song. You know, it's never how it's going to be. So it's just been cool again to have people writing or thinking about our music at all.
I'd say some of the feedback I've noted is that, like, when we're trying to network with people, they might ask you for something like, oh, well, I'll play this song. Can you give me this radio clip? Could you give me a little bio? Could you give me an exclusive quote? And when we get back to people, we're hearing, oh, wow, you guys got back to me so fast. You're so professional. This is super awesome. Thank you so much. You wouldn't imagine how many bands we drop or start to ignore because they're just not getting back to us with these requests. So I'd say get back with those requests. If you can't, like, at least respond back, do something, because that goes a long way.
It does, yeah. And yeah, I know that from the other side of the industry. Like when a band is responding or a PR company is getting back to you and going, yeah, thanks, man. Like, I appreciate you playing that song. You're like, okay, this is just a cool person at the other end of the line. I'm obviously going to work with this person. So, you know, that's it.
I was going to bring it back to your stage performances because I've been a long time watcher. I think it's been 10 years.
Yeah.
Do you have a pre-ritual for all that energy, for how manic the interplay between the two of you is on stage?
Not really a ritual. Like we always like to say it's not really preconceived. Like the only thing that definitely happens every show is me getting strangled with a mic cable.
It's just too fun not to do it.
Yeah, like that's, we know that's going to happen.
Well, but that's even, what had me hooked.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's not even, yeah, we don't even like practice that. I just know it's going to happen. I know I'm going to have to hold my breath a little because I won't be able to breathe while soloing, and that's fine. But yeah, the other stuff just kind of happens. But we do have like, I would say, talks between us every now and then just to check in, make sure, you know, no one's too upset, because sometimes a little bump might, just in the wrong way, might upset, you know, one of each other. But your line is, if you're not having as much fun on stage as someone else, that's your own fault. So just start having fun. And that's true. That's the thing you always say to me that gets me kind of like, you know what, you're right. Just let everything go. But there are still lines. And I think that's what the talks involve too. I always say, like, shall I talk? When Leia wrapped Peter up in duct tape the one time, like wrapped his face and his eyebrows and his hair, I was like, just like anything, but like duct tape on the face and hair, please. Like, okay, that's my one
we
thing.
We were at the Bannock Shack a few weeks ago, and there was a giant spider in the corner of the stage. And I was like, if you want to see a real show, someone come put this spider on Ted. And he was legitimately afraid that someone was going to do that. And he was so mad at me, come over and he's yelling at me like, why would you say that? And I'm like, no one's going to come put this spider on you.
I was so convinced someone would. I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like,
so that line was crossed. Don't put a spider on Ted.
Or it'll become sunburned.
Yeah.
Like a sunburned spider. Even if it's, that's the only one I might accept.
But yeah, no, it's kind of funny. I don't know where the energy comes from. I think it is a little bit of like an alter ego before stage or getting on the stage. I'm a little like, no one talk to me. Don't look at me. Don't touch me, which is funny because usually everyone's coming up to you being like, are you excited? You're so excited, right? You're excited. You're going to like, yeah. And I'm like, don't even look at me. And then when I'm done, then I'm like, yeah, okay, let's go. That was awesome, right? Like so much energy. But before stage, it's just
mental preparation.
Yeah, that's it. Just in the zone. Don't look at me.
It's before the Red Bull and Pringles kick
in. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And yeah, same thing. I think on stage, I just do the setup. I'm already sweaty before we've even started. And then it's like, just go, I think. If I'm not having as much fun as Amanda or someone on stage, I just got to give my head a shake and just start dancing again and have some fun.
Hell yeah. Your sophomore album, Pavlova's Dog, is coming out on the 16th of September. Your release show for that record is just a few days before at the Broom Factory on the 12th of September, opening for DOA. Meringues, thanks so much for coming in, guys.
Hey, thanks, Riley. Thanks, Virginia.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thank you for going.
This has been Kingston Live.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, please share it, tell a friend, or subscribe on your platform of choice. For show listings, artist info, and all things Kingston music, check out kingstonlive.ca. Kingston Live was produced in Kingston by Soundwise, hosted by Riley Jabor and Virginia Meeks. Voiceovers and technical production by John Sanfilippo. Writing and research by Peter Sanfilippo. Executive producer Rob Howard. We'd love to hear from you. Email us at podcast@kingstonlive.ca.
Did you know that New Leaf Link offers day programming for adults with developmental disabilities? We serve families in Kingston and South Frontenac. Our program focuses on arts, healthy living, and community connections, including summer camp. New Leaf Link's caring staff and talented instructors provide a place for everyone to learn together and build friendships. If you or someone you know would like to join our program, please visit newleaflink.ca for more details. Together, we can grow, connect, and belong.
Your true, true friend loves you just as you are.
What's that like, the taste of butter? A pretty dress. What's that like to live deliciously?
Join me, your host, Chris, for The Witching Hour live on CFRC 101.9 FM every Wednesday at 12 a.m., where you can get your weekly dose of metalcore, post-hardcore, crying, screaming, and sometimes throwing up.
Oh my God!
Oh my God!
They say nothing good happens after midnight, but why not stay a while and find out?